Hi, and welcome to Module 2, Database Architecture. In this module, we will discuss the physical storage and the architecture of that storage in the database, each individual database, and how various aspects of the both logical and physical storage maps between Oracle and SQL Server. Among other things, we will talk about database and schema objects. So we will talk about what are the basic objects in Oracle and in SQL Server, and what are the main differences there. We will talk in detail about storage architecture and various pieces of storage. So what are table spaces, and what are file groups, and how extents data pages map between Oracle and SQL Server. We'll talk in detail about SQL Server data files and how you create them and how you manage them. And we'll also talk about logging model and the differences between Oracle's and Microsoft's logging models. And then finally, we will talk about the data dictionary, so how to retrieve the metadata for your objects. Let me start by discussing the schema and data structures that are available in Oracle and in SQL Server. So as you already know, schema is a collection of objects inside your database. A schema is just a logical container for objects that might be related to the same topic. It's not a physical object or not a physical container, but rather just a logical collection. Just like in Oracle, in SQL Server, schemas provide for logical separation and logical grouping of various objects that might be related to the same area or inside your database. If you look at the table on the slide, the comparison of core schema and data objects between Oracle and SQL Server, you can see that the fundamental objects such as table, index, and view are exactly the same in Oracle and SQL Server. There might, of course, be some little functional differences that we will discuss in later modules. Synonym works the same in Oracle and in SQL Server. SQL Server 2012 introduced sequences, and the implementation of sequences is analogous to that in Oracle, because the sequences in SQL Server were introduced to provide more compatibility with Oracle functionality. Oracle's procedure is called stored procedure in SQL Server, and it provides pretty much the same functionality. Both Oracle and SQL Server have functions that can retrieve and return various pieces of data. However, there is one important difference between Oracle and SQL Server function. In a SQL Server, a function cannot modify the state of the database. So essentially, functions in SQL Server are read-only, unlike functions in Oracle that can be used to, for instance, insert data into a table. Other objects that are available in SQL Server and in Oracle are service broker or queues in Oracle and service broker queue in SQL Server. We'll be talking about service broker in module 14. There is no notion of package in SQL Server. Oracle has package as a unit of deployment for your database objects. There is no similar structure in SQL Server. The only similar functionality is an assembly. If you use SQL CLR, in other words, if you write your code in one of the .NET languages, such as C#, and deploy it into a database, then that assembly, being a unit of deployment, is somewhat similar to a package in Oracle. However, they are very different from the Oracle packages because they are not used to group normal objects written in Transact SQL. Oracle has object types. SQL Server also has object types that are generally implemented using SQL CLR. So what you do, you essentially write a class in C#, and then the instance of that class that is your object, you can serialize it into your database. So you can store your objects inside the database, and your class might be exposing various methods and properties for manipulating those objects. Both Oracle and SQL Server support XML data type. Of course, that support differs between Oracle and SQL Server. So in Oracle, it's called XMLDB. In SQL Server, you have XML data type. You have XML schema collections for validation of the XML data using XML schemas. And you have the ability to create XML indexes that speed up certain types of XML related queries. Now, let's take a look at the storage architecture of Oracle and SQL Server. So storage architecture includes both the physical structures, such as data files, as well as logical structures, so all the objects and all the smaller divisions of the files that are used to store your data. So both Oracle and SQL Server use data file as the basic physical structure. Of course, there are also log files and for logging. We will get to those a little bit later. As you can see from the slide, the Oracle's table space maps into SQL Server file group. So whether in Oracle you place your objects on a specific table space or in a specific table space, in SQL Server, you place your objects in specific file groups, and those file groups are logical groupings of multiple data files. And they can be used to store your object across multiple data files. The main type of object that you store in your data files is called a segment in Oracle, and in SQL Server, it's an allocation unit. We often call them hobbits, like in the movie or in the book Lord of the Rings. So hobbit is heap or B-tree. Every object you have in SQL Server is represented. Every physical object that stores data is either a heap, so a loose collection of data pages, or it's a B-tree, so basically a bunch of tables that are organized into index-like structure. Those heap or B-trees are placed within individual file groups, and within those file groups, they occupy extents. An extent in Oracle is a collection of data blocks, and in SQL Server, an extent is a collection of data pages. Because data pages in SQL Server are fixed size, so are the extents. And extent in SQL Server is a contiguous eight data pages. So one extent is exactly 64 kilobytes. The data blocks and extents map very nicely between Oracle and SQL Server. It's just the terminology and some of the implementation details that differ. So the smallest unit of storage in Oracle is called block, and in SQL Server it's called page. So we have data blocks and data pages. They can have variable size in Oracle, whether they always have 8K fixed size in SQL Server. Storage allocation is performed in multiple blocks, Those blocks are called extents. Those extents can have variable size in Oracle, but they are always fixed at 64K in SQL Server. The objects that allocate space within Oracle are called segments. And in SQL Server, the equivalent structure is a single allocation unit. If you have multiple indexes, each index will have at least one allocation unit, potentially more, especially if the index or table is partitioned. Each partition will be its own separate allocation unit. So as you can see, the idea and the basic concepts behind the storage allocation are very similar between Oracle and SQL Server. It's just the terminology that differs. So the storage allocation, again, illustrated here. In Oracle, you have a single segment that can represent table or an index on that table, and that segment will be allocating extents within your table space. Whether in SQL Server you have heap or B-tree or heap or index, so a single allocation unit that allocates extents from a particular table space. Another interesting difference between Oracle and SQL Server when it comes to managing extents is that in Oracle, each extent is always dedicated to a particular object, to a particular segment. In SQL Server, that is called a uniform extent. But SQL Server also has so-called mixed extents, where each page within an extent might belong to a separate object. Those mixed extents are used to allocate space for very small objects, small objects that have less than 8 pages of data. So if your object is less than 64K, it might get individual pages allocated rather than full extents. Once your object is more than 64K, it will be allocating space extents, so in full uniform extents. But the first few individual allocations that are performed for your object are done using mixed extents and allocating individual pages rather than allocating full extents. That's a basically storage space optimization. SQL Server has a pages that are used to track where the space is available within your files. Those pages are called global allocation map and shared global allocation map, and they are equivalent of the Oracle system pages that also track the same extent allocation information using similar bitmaps. Now, to understand how global allocation map and shared global allocation map work together, let's take a look at an example. So every file, every data file in SQL Server has what is known as a file header extent. That's basically the first extent in your data file. That's the first 8 pages. You have a file header there. You have a PFS or page free space that is used to track empty space or free space within heaps. And then page 2 and 3 are global allocation map and shared global allocation map. And your extents, as you know, might be either uniform, where all the pages belong to a single object, or they might be mixed extents, where each page might come from a different object. And GAM and SGAM are bitmaps that are used to track this this space. So if your extent is not allocated at all and it's free for allocation, global allocation map will have a bit setting of 1. For that extent, so you can easily locate any empty extents within the file. However, if your extent is allocated, depending on the situation, that extent might either be a uniform extent where no further allocations are possible, or a mixed extent where no further allocations are possible, or it might be a mixed extent where still some pages are available for allocation. So if you're looking to allocate a single page rather than a full extent, you can use the shared global allocation map to locate such extent and allocate it, allocate space from that extent. Now, let's talk a little bit more about table spaces and data files. So both Oracle and SQL Server have data files, and in Oracle groups those data files into table spaces. So that's the largest logical structure. You always allocate your objects to a particular table space. The equivalent structure in SQL Server is called a file group. And as the name suggests, it's a grouping of multiple files to provide a single allocation mechanism for your data. So both table spaces and file groups are used to groups or allocate space for your application and database objects. The main reason for creating file groups in SQL Server is to provide manageability and to break your database into smaller, more manageable pieces. You can perform certain operations on a file group basis. For instance, you can back up individual file groups separately. And you can co-locate certain objects together and decide what goes where. That's the main reason for having multiple file groups in a single SQL database. But many SQL Server databases will have only one file group, and that's okay too, depending on what is your database and how big it is and what are the manageability requirements there. Now, let's talk about how various specialized Oracle file groups map into SQL Server data files. But before that, let's take a look at three types of data files that SQL Server provides. First of all, each database in SQL Server will have a primary data file. The primary data file forms a basis for the primary file group. Primary file group is where all your system objects will reside. In addition to that, by the way, the primary data file has extension MDF, probably because the PDF extension was already taken when Microsoft allocated it. In addition to the primary file group, each database will always have at least one log file. Log file has an extension of LDF, and I will discuss the internal structure of the log file in a few moments, where I discuss the logging module, the logging model, and the differences between Oracle and SQL Server in that. In addition to those two, which are mandatory, you may also have multiple additional so-called secondary data files, extension NDF. So it is very often, so basically out of the box, your database always has the primary data file and the log file. And those are the two that you must have. But if you decide to add additional files to your database, any subsequent data file you add will be one of those secondary data files. And you can group those data files, those both the primary and the secondary data files, into file groups depending on your needs. Each database always has the primary file group, and that's where that's the file group containing your primary data file, and that's where all your system objects reside. But you can decide to create additional file groups and put your user objects and your application tables into those additional file groups. So in the example that we have on the slide here, we have a database called MyDB. The database has a total of 4 files. It has a primary primary data file that resides in the primary file group. We have a single log file. Log file does not belong to any file group. And then we have a MyDBFG1 custom, you know, user-created file group. And that file group contains 2 separate data files, MyDBFG1 and 2 with extension NDF. So these are 2 secondary data files in that file group. And then we can create our objects either in the primary file group or in our custom MyDBFG1 file group. Let me show you how you can see and create how you can see the metadata for your database and file groups that are there, and how you can create additional file groups and create objects within those file groups. So I'm going to connect to my database engine instance 01. And I have a database there called AdventureWorks 2012. If I click on the properties for that database, I open the properties database properties dialog. You can see that I have one of the tabs that I have available are files and file groups. And this database currently has one data file called AdventureWorks 2012 data, and one log file called AdventureWorks 2012 log. Because I only have one data file, I also have only one file group, and that's the primary file group containing one file. I could add additional file groups and files using this dialog, but I can also do that using Transact SQL. So I will, in this case, I'm going to use a Transact SQL script to add 2 additional file groups and 2 additional files to my database. Using alter database statement, I can add additional file group, and I will add a file group called AW2012IDX and AW2012LOB. So I create 2 additional file groups here, and then I create an additional file called AdventureWorks 2012 index with a particular file name, which is the physical file, and it's defined in the variable up here. So this is the physical name for the file that I will be creating. And I add this file in a particular file group. And then I do another secondary data file and add it to the other file group that I created. So if I execute those couple statements, I have just created 2 additional file groups and 2 additional secondary data files in my database, as can be demonstrated either by using my graphical interface and the fact that I have 2 additional files belonging to 2 extra file groups. And those file groups are, of course, visible here as well. Or I can run a query against sys file groups and sys database files catalog views and see a similar information. So I can see that I have now 4 files in the database, 3 of them being data files and 1 of them being a log file. Now, each object can be allocated to a specific file group. One way we can see it is using sphelp stored proc and querying for metadata related to the sales currency table. So in this case, I get a lot of information about sales currency table, and one of the information are indexes that are created on this database. As you can see, I have a clustered unique primary key index that is located on the primary 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 file group, and I have another non-clustered unique index also located on a primary file group. If I wanted, I could, for instance, create a new index or a new table and specify that this table should be created in one of the new file groups that I just created in my demo. This is something that we will be doing a little bit later during this class. So let's go back to the slides. Now, in Oracle, you have a number of special purpose table spaces that play various important roles in your database. Since one instance governs only one database, those system and special table spaces play a similar role as the system databases in SQL Server. So as you can see from this slide, in SQL Server, the role of the system table space is played by a separate master database. The master database is one of those system databases that stores your configuration and certain instance level objects, among other things, for instance, definitions for your user accounts. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later. Another important database is a resource database. It's actually hidden and you don't see it, and the name for it is MS SQL System Resource. That's the kind of official real name for that database. That database is only used as a code repository. It doesn't actually store any metadata. It doesn't store any persistent information. It doesn't store any configuration. It only serves as a code repository for all the system objects. The sys schema in SQL Server and all the system objects in that sys schema map to the resource DB. That database is a read-only database, and whenever you upgrade your SQL Server or you patch it, the entire data file for that database is replaced with the new one containing new definitions that map to an appropriate level of SQL Server, SQL Server build. So that's a very important database, but it's a read-only database that doesn't actually store any information that is specific to your instance. Now, temporary table space in Oracle that is used to store all your temporary objects maps into TempDB database in SQL Server. TempDB is a separate database that will hold all the temporary or will serve all the temporary storage needs for your entire instance, both in terms of user objects, such as your user-created temporary tables, as well as any internal objects that only need storage temporarily. It could be work tables, index spools, could be spills and things like that. Many things go to TempDB and use TempDB for essentially temporary volatile storage. TempDB is somewhat interesting database because the logging model for TempDB differs from the logging model of all other databases. Since you never recover TempDB, you never have the need to run recovery on it to bring it to a consistent transactionally consistent state. You only log the undo information for TempDB. You never log the redo information because you're never going to be running any redo in TempDB. Whenever SQL Server is restarted, your TempDB is recreated from scratch. You basically start with kind of like empty blank TempDB instance. So that's because, of course, anything that goes into TempDB is by definition volatile and does not need to be stored long term. Now, another interesting database is ModelDB. That's another system database. And ModelDB serves as a template for any user-created database. Whenever you create a new database on your instance, you actually do that by creating, by copying ModelDB and inheriting whatever configuration and whatever options were set on that database. And then finally, the fifth system database that you will always have on your SQL Server instance is called MSDB. And that's, as the name suggests, it's the Microsoft database, and it's kind of catch-all database for various additional auxiliary information that is stored on your database on your SQL Server instance. The most important or the most popular use for that database is SQL Server Agent. SQL Server Agent as the job engine or scheduling engine for SQL Server stores all its job definitions, schedule definitions, alert definitions, and things like that in MSDB. Another thing that is stored in MSDB is in history of your backups. So whenever you, whenever you take a backup of a database on instance, you get an entry in a special set of history backup tables, backup history tables in that MSDB database. So those are five system databases that you always, out of the box, have on your SQL Server. And then whatever user database you create, in this case we have a user database created on our instance, that database will be the sixth and whatever subsequent database on your instance. But at the very minimum, when you create, when you install SQL Server, it comes with five system databases that are always there, and their role maps to a role of various table spaces that are present in Oracle. Now, a very important difference also between Oracle and SQL Server is in how they perform logging. And I'll talk about that in a few seconds. So let's take a look at what are those system databases and how we can see those system databases in SQL Server. So I'm already connected to my SQL Server instance here. And using Object Explorer, I can see two user databases, AdventureWorks 2012 and AdventureWorks DW 2012. If I expand the system databases folder here, I see four specific system databases. The master database, you know, configuration and instance level objects and resources. I see model database, our template. I have I see MSDB, where the SQL Server agent stores its information, and I have and I also see TempDB, which is our temporary table space or you know a temporary storage for anything. The one database I don't actually see on this list because it's hidden is the MS SQL resource database. You don't see it from a normal connection. It's not visible, although all the objects that are there are accessible using sys schema. So whenever I run a query such as select star from sys dot, let's say, objects, I'm actually referring to a system object that is defined within that MS resource database. You don't see the database on the list, but you can actually see the file, the data file, and the log file for the database by browsing to your binaries directory for your SQL Server. So whatever the SQL Server binaries are stored, we have MS SQL System Resource MDF, the primary data file, and the LDF, the transaction log file, stored there. The log file is present despite the fact that the resource database is actually a read-only database. So you don't see it, you cannot modify it. It comes with your SQL Server binaries, and the version of that database has to match the version of the binaries. And it provides all the system objects. So whenever you are referencing anything within the sys schema, and as you can see, the number of objects under sys schema is rather large. All those objects are actually, or the definitions for those objects are stored within that resource database. So these were the system databases that are present on each instance of SQL Server separately. Now, let's talk a little bit about the logging model. Oracle has two separate parts of transaction logging. It uses the redo logs to store information about how to redo a transaction, so basically how to redo a transaction in case of a crash. And it also has the undo segments that capture the before image of the data so that in case you roll back your transaction or it needs to be rolled back during recovery, you can undo whatever changes were made by it using those undo segments. SQL Server has both of those functions under one umbrella and in one file. That file is called transaction log. So SQL Server has transaction logs that store both the before and after images of the rows. And therefore, you can perform both the undo and redo from that single transaction log, and it covers all the recovery needs of the database. Physically, very often your transaction log is just a single file. It can be a large file, but it's a single physical file. However, internally, that transaction log is divided into multiple so-called virtual logs. We often call them virtual log files or VLFs. Each of the VLFs can be either used or unused or truncated. So in this example here, we have five virtual logs. The virtual log 3 and 4 are the only ones that are in use. Virtual log 3 contains what is known as minimum LSN, minimum log sequence number. It's basically the starting point for any recovery operation on your database. If you want to recover this database after a crash or after a restart to a transactionally consistent state, you have to start at the minimum log sequence number, which is the older of either the oldest running transaction or whatever was your last checkpoint. So basically, your logical transaction log is VLF 3 and VLF 4. Virtual log 5 is unused; it's never been used. And virtual logs 1 and 2, in our example, have been used in the past, but since they were no longer needed for recovery, they were truncated. And that truncation can either occur automatically or whenever you take a transaction log backup. So whenever you have those multiple VLFs, SQL Server uses them sequentially, and it goes from one VLF to another. When it reaches the end of the file, it will kind of come around and start from the beginning and start using whatever older VLFs were truncated and are no longer needed. So basically, they are reusable and they can be reused. If you run out of space and if you run out of empty or unused VLFs, it will extend the file and add additional VLFs. So it will extend the physical files and add additional virtual logs so that it can store whatever log records are needed. Now, you can have, technically, you can have multiple log files, physical log files. However, there is rarely a point in doing that because your transaction log files will not be used at the same time. They will only be used sequentially. So as the SQL Server will use one at a time, and only when it fills up one transaction log, it will come and start using the other one. It is illustrated on my slide where you can see that after using, if we didn't have the virtual log file, after using all of virtual log 4, it can come around and start using virtual log 1 again. So the management of the transaction log in SQL Server pretty much boils down to managing the size of that physical transaction log file, making sure that it's neither too small or too large, and in some cases also managing the number of VLFs that are contained there in order to have just the right number for the size of the log that you have. So the next thing I would like to discuss here is the data dictionary. In other words, the metadata for your database and how you can retrieve that metadata. In Oracle, that data dictionary is stored under the sys schema in the system table space. As you already know, SQL Server also has a sys schema where all the system objects are stored or defined. That sys schema maps to that MS SQL resource database. In SQL Server, the data dictionary can be retrieved in a number of different ways. There's a number of different data dictionary objects that are available. First of all, you have so-called catalog views. And catalog views are the main way, or the primary way of retrieving your metadata, your database metadata. It used to be in the old times that SQL Server exposed the system tables. So you could actually query, and in some cases even modify, the system tables that stored the definition of your database. Now, in order to prevent all kinds of problems and provide a layer of abstraction over those system tables, and therefore be able to modify the schema of the system tables without breaking compatibility with your applications, in SQL Server 2005, Microsoft introduced catalog views. And catalog views, as the name suggests, there are views that are built on top of what are the actual system tables. The system tables remain hidden. You don't see them. You cannot query them directly. The only access to the main access to the metadata is provided by the catalog views. So you query your system tables through your catalog views, and that those catalog views provide a standard schema, and they're well documented, and there are the main interface that is used to query your metadata. Apart from the catalog views, you also have so-called backwards compatibility views. Now, backwards compatibility views are kind of interesting animals because these are views that pretend to be the system tables as we know them from the old versions of SQL Server. So again, the backward compatibility views are just there to provide compatibility with applications who were written against SQL Server 2000 and couldn't, and therefore expect a particular system table to be available. So basically, they mimic old system tables to provide compatibility with older applications who might be querying the metadata through those system tables. Another important category are so-called dynamic management views, or DMVs, as we often call them. Dynamic management views, as the name suggests, provide dynamic information or dynamic data about the state of the server. They are not used to query the persistent metadata and the schema of your database, but they store certain or they expose certain information about the current internal state of the server, as well as certain statistics about how your queries are executed, etc., etc. They are very important when it comes to diagnosing, troubleshooting, performance tuning, and other aspects of managing and day-to-day running of your SQL Server instances. So the big difference between a catalog view and a dynamic management view is that one presents a persistent metadata, whether the other one, whether the catalog, the dynamic management view provides information that is by definition dynamic and kind of up to the second and can change at any time. And then finally, the fourth category are information schema views. These are based on the ANSI standard, and they are of course also present in Oracle. So I'm sure you are familiar with those. These are ANSI standard ways of presenting metadata to your application. Now, definitions for all those objects in SQL Server are actually stored in that special hidden resource database. So now, let me show you an example of how you can query the data dictionary, in other words, your metadata, using various methods in SQL Server. So one of the most important catalog views in SQL Server is called sys.objects, and it basically provides a list of all the objects that are present in a particular database. So we can see all kinds of various objects. As the type description column indicates, they are everything from user tables to system tables to foreign key constraints, all kinds of both physical and logical objects in my database. If I query for type S, this will be all my system tables. If I query for type V, I will see all the views. P, all the procedures, etc., etc. So let's query for user tables. So as you can see, I have about 71 user tables, exactly 71 user tables in my AdventureWorks 2012 database. Now, similar information can also be retrieved using another catalog view called sys.tables. And catalog views in SQL Server create a certain inheritance hierarchy, where you go from a more generic object, sys.objects in this case, or more generic catalog view, to a more specialized one. So if you compare the results of querying sys objects with sys tables, you may notice something very interesting. First of all, of course, sys object has more rows, and system tables has fewer rows, but they also contain all the same columns, at least for the most part. And then the system tables, let me just get it aligned here a little bit better. You may notice that system tables has all the same columns as sys objects, but then it also has a bunch of other columns that are not present in sys objects because those columns are specific to tables. They only are meaningful when the object type is table. So you kind of go from a more generic catalog view that has more rows but fewer columns to a more specialized catalog view where you have fewer rows but more columns. And those, some of those columns might be specific to whatever type of the object you are querying. Another way of querying for the data dictionary could be within a particular database. So we can, for instance, specify the database name here. And in that case, we are querying for all the columns of a particular object by providing an object ID for a known table name. So we use an object ID function to get the object ID for human resources shift table, and then based on that, retrieve definition of all five columns that exist within that table. You can also use system stored procs, system stored procedures to query for various metadata. One of the most important of those is called SP underscore help. And SP help returns basically information about various objects depending on, and the set of the information depends on what is the type of the object. So we can see in this case that sys.databases is a view, and that view has a particular set of columns. So we basically get a list of all the 68 columns that are present in the SIS databases catalog view. I could equally well, for instance, take the human resources shift table provided as the parameter for my SP help, and I would get a different set of data because now I am querying or looking for metadata and look for information about a user table. So actually what result set is returned by that stored proc depends on what is the type of the object that we are querying. Another example of such system stored proc that can be used to provide metadata is SP columns. So as the name suggests, it is used to retrieve column names for column names and column types for various tables. So in this case, I have information about all the columns in my shift database. So these are catalog views and stored procs. I could also query one of the compatibility views. And now I would like to point to you that there is a big difference between the object called sys.objects and another very similar view called sysobjects without the dot. Sysobjects, there you go, sysobjects like this is a compatibility view. It's one of those views that mimics the old system tables. And as you can see, there is a whole lot of columns. Those columns are different than the columns in the sysobjects catalog view. They actually have completely different meaning. The schema is not fully documented. Many things there are internal use only, etc., etc., and are not documented by Microsoft. What is the meaning of a of all the bits in the status column, for instance? So these are only used for compatibility. The standard preferred way of querying for metadata should be the current catalog view. So you should be using the sys.objects, which is the catalog view, not sysobjects, which is the compatibility view. The real name for this object is sys.sysobjects, because it's that compatibility view is also contained within the sys schema. And another example, just let me show you the last example here, is querying one of the dynamic management views. So for instance, I can query a view called sys.dm.exec.requests to see, and we will be talking about this view a little bit later, to see any queries that are currently executing. And all the requests, also including background threads, that are currently executing. So I actually see my own query here executing as I query sysdm exec request. This is one of those DMVs. The information provided from this view will change every time you execute it because it provides dynamic, up-to-the-minute information about what's going on your server or what is the internal state of the server, what is contained in memory, etc., etc. So in this demonstration, you've seen how to query the data dictionary and see what's contained within your database and what is the metadata. In this module, we've covered the differences between some of the core schema objects in Oracle and in SQL Server. We've covered similarities and differences in physical storage architecture, how SQL Server and Oracle manages physical space and manages storage for your objects, how are extents organized, what is the difference between table space and file group. We've compared the structures, and we've also covered very important differences in transaction logging and the fact that SQL Server has one log file that stores both the redo and undo information. And finally, we have looked at various ways of querying your database metadata and seeing the data dictionary in SQL Server. Thank you very much for watching, and I see you at Module 3, where we will discuss the instance architecture and how SQL Server manages resources in terms of memory and CPU. Thank you.